Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian. I'm Daniel Messer. Later, unless you're working in a very small library, you're going to have to make up something in a word processor or a desktop publishing app that you'll print out and hang up somewhere for someone to see. It could be a sign for the bathrooms, a posting of the latest study room reservations, maybe a sign that the library will be closed for a holiday, whatever. You're going to wind up printing something out and hanging it up someplace, right? Or maybe you're going to whip up a few flyers for an upcoming program. Maybe a poster to stick in a plastic sign holder next to the self-checkout machines. Do you still use sign-up sheets for the, reservations for study rooms? Well, you'll need to put that together and print it out, too. The thing is, most people don't think too much about these little bits of signage and print-based doodads that they whip up, print out, and then put up somewhere for their entire user base to see. And when you think about it in that context, making something that people who use your library, that they're going to see this. Don't you want to at least put a little bit of effort into it? After all, you don't have to be Bob Ross to paint a picture, and you don't have to be Saul Bass to do a little graphic design. This is Cyberpunk Librarian, episode 27, Pretty Pictures, Better Design. I'm Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood Cyberpunk Librarian, welcoming you back to the show that is all about exploring the intersection of libraries and technology, and is all about living that high-tech, low-budget lifestyle. So hey, welcome back. It is lovely to be back in front of the microphone again after a holiday hiatus and some time off to spend with family and friends. We are back for another year of library tech tips and tricks, and I thank you so much for joining me once again here on Cyberpunk Librarian. So, on this episode, we're going to talk a little about design and why it's kind of an important thing, even if you don't think so. I invite you, take a look around you, right now, especially if you happen to be at work. Have you ever given any thought to how the things that are around you came to be? From your desk, to your smartphone, to the walls of your library, your entire world is designed, right down to the clothes that you're wearing. At least I hope you're wearing clothes at work. It would probably be a good idea. If not, well, enjoy your prison sentence. I hope it's an easy stretch and that you get out fairly soon for good behavior. Now, there's a long-standing rule in design that's kind of a joke, too, in that people don't notice a great design, but they will certainly notice bad design. Next time you wander through an airport, take a minute or two to really pay attention to how to get to a given gate, for instance. Sure, there are signs, but what do they look like? How many signs are there? Where are the bathrooms? If you've been in multiple airports, especially in the same day, like you've got a layover someplace, you'll notice a difference, even if the design is good. It's all in a combination of the space, the needs, the designers, and how people should flow from one place to another. We here on the show are not aspiring to such lofty goals. We're going to make an out-of-order sign for a computer, or a quick thing to post on the front desk that says we'll be closed for Martin Luther King Day. Maybe we want a little side hanging off a shelf pointing out something interesting about a book or a collection. Whatever you need, I think you owe it to yourself and your patrons to make sure that your signs, notices, and such are well-designed and that you've put some thought into them. If nothing else, you owe it to the reason you're putting up the sign in the first place, So, let's go do the thing that we normally do and break the show into a couple of parts, techniques and tools. For techniques, we're going to talk about some very basic design ideas and how you can draw attention to something without drawing the wrong kind of attention to it. After that, we'll roll up our sleeves and try some tools to make this kind of thing actually happen. Ready to roll? And hey, you don't need a fancy designer notebook to follow along either. We'll be right back. Now then, I don't want to diminish the role of a professional graphic designer in any organization. Just like anybody can program, that doesn't mean that everybody just goes and gets a degree in computer science. Everybody can do a little graphic design, but probably not as well as a pro with years of training, okay? So to be clear and open, while I do professional graphic design as part of my job, I don't really consider myself to be a professional graphic designer. My job mainly revolves around creating work that juxtaposes graphics, images, and text in a pleasant way designed for digital displays. That could mean a large digital sign in a library or the monitor on your laptop at home. So far, people seem to like my work, at least for the most part. I've received more praise than derision, and I guess that means something? I don't know. Either way, I'd like to share three techniques, that's right, just three, that will help you make better posters, flyers, and graphics for your library needs. Is this the be-all, end-all of design? Of course not. There is an entire discipline around how to design the right thing for the right place that gives you the right result. However, with just three things in mind, you'll improve your signage and prints and how they're displayed in your library. And for once, we'll hit them in the order of importance. So, the most important thing to any design work, in my opinion, is the grid. Almost any design program from Photoshop to Publisher to Pixelmator and beyond has some sort of grid function available to you. Now, the grid is just that, a set of perpendicular lines that you use as a guide for, well, everything. If you want balance, levelness, and the fit and focus that comes with a good design, then you need to use a grid. It sounds simple, and it really kind of is. But the grid not only helps you with the arrangement, but also the balance. Do you want two lines of text to sit equidistant from the edges of your project? Well, look at the squares on the grid and make sure that the number of squares from the edge of your project to the edge of your text is the same on both sides. Do you want to make sure there's a balanced amount of space between the bottom line of text and the top line of another? Look at your grid. Is your image really straight or is it a little cockeyed? Well, your grid will tell you. You'd be surprised how much better your signs and flyers will look if you lay them out on a grid. Try it. I think you'll like the results. Now, some people might see the grid as a constraining feature. You know, well, I have to use this grid and I have to put my things on horizontal and vertical lines. And what if I want something slanted or what if I want an angle on something? You can still do this, and the grid will still help you. But I have to really recommend use a grid. It actually makes your job easier. You're not guessing anymore. You're actually able to see how things are laid out, and thus you can have a better layout for whatever it is you're making. The second technique is actually a movement in graphic design. It started out around the time of the Roaring Twenties in the Netherlands with an artistic movement called De Stijl, which means the style. Now, I might be pronouncing that wrong. This is one of those instances where I've read about this De Stijl, which is one of those things that I've never actually heard anybody else say. So in my mind, I think I know how to pronounce it. It's D-E space S-T-I-J-L, I believe that's right. And it just means the style. This is Dutch. So from there, other artists picked up on De Stijl's abstraction and the reduction of form into basic shapes and designs. That's what this is. I'll have a link to show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast so you can check out some examples of De Stijl and kind of get an idea as to what I'm talking about when I say basic shapes and designs. So clutter is eschewed, and choices are made based on a more simplistic, yet eye-catching presentation. The movement and technique that I'm talking about is called minimalism, and it can change everything for the better when it comes to your signage and more. So, have you ever seen someone try and do way too much with a flyer or a sign? I've seen signs for bathrooms that were composed of the standard male and female icon that you would normally see on a restroom door. Then there was text labeled men's and women's above the icon, and the entire thing was framed top and bottom with text that said restrooms this way, and an arrow off to the side of the icons pointing the way to the restroom. The text for men's was written in a strong block font. The text for women's was a more script style, like a cursive font. The restrooms this way font was totally different from those, and the arrow was a completely different style of icon than the man and woman icon that you typically see on the doors. It looked like crap. I won't even pull a punch there. It looked horrible. It was hard to read, it was hard to parse, and if you really need to go to the restroom, this sign was going to waste your time while you tried to figure it out. When you make anything like a flyer or a sign or something, sit down and think for a minute or so, you know, about what you really need it to say. Let's go back to that restroom sign for a second. Did it really need to say all of that? Did it need to scream restrooms this way along with men's and women's? Or could it simply have had the iconic images with a matching arrow pointing the way? If you think that wouldn't work, I invite you to visit your nearest large space like a stadium or an airport and check out how they do it, because I bet they do it in a very similar way to that. People know what those images for men's and women's restrooms are for, and they understand arrows. In this case, it wasn't just the multiple fonts confusing the sign. It was the text itself. If you don't need something on your sign or your flyer, then don't put it there. It's that simple. You can leave it off. Keep it clutter-free. Say you're having a great puppet story time with some master puppeteers. You should totally put pictures of the puppets on that flyer, or something that will catch the eye. You should also announce the event on the top with words like special puppet performance, or something like that. And everything should be in one, count it, one font. I am also going to go out on a limb here, a little designer's limb, and suggest that that font be a sans serif font, like Arial, or Helvetica, or Futura. You'll want to balance the sizes of the font so your headline is a headline and your other information is weighted properly and everything balances. Oh, and if you're having trouble getting your words to show up well on an image, keep in mind that white text with a black outline can be read on everything. And that note brings us to the final technique, the 10-foot glance. Most people know that signs, even good ones, are almost invisible and rarely read completely. I had a rhetoric teacher in high school who said it best when he said that the only way you'll ever get anyone to notice a sign is to either put money on it or use an image of a naked woman. And that's probably why so many advertisements use half-naked women, even when they're selling something with a target market of heterosexual women. You probably shouldn't use scantily clad ladies on your library stuff, but if there is something, you know, if there is something you should always keep in mind. Can I read this sign while I'm walking past it from a distance of 10 feet? Now, that doesn't exactly apply to a flyer or something that someone takes with them and holds in their hand, but the principle remains. Can this thing be interpreted from a distance? If the answer is no, then fix it so it can. How many times have you gone to a wonderful little indie coffee house and then stood there in line squinting up at their beautiful handwritten menu above the bar? Sure, the coffees might be written in something bold like pink on black, but it's written in Delilah's handwriting. Delilah is the cute barista who's there every Friday night. And while Delilah's handwriting is almost as pretty as Delilah, it's hard to read when you're 8 feet off the ground and 7 feet back from where you're standing. So, yeah, that makes it hard to read. It's hard to order coffee. That's why I recommend sans serif fonts for signs or anything that might be read from a distance of 10 feet. There are very good reasons the Department of Transportation uses sans serif fonts on their road signs, but the main one is that you can read the sign from a distance while driving toward it at speed. For your flyers and the like, I recommend a serif font that's easy on the eyes and provides a little class. Times New Roman is a classic, as is Garamond, and hey, have a look at Clarendon too. That's a beautiful font. And it gives a little class. It's easy to read if you're holding it and looking at it in front of you. You'll notice that fonts like Times New Roman and Garamond and Clarendon are used a lot in books. But then again, you're also not trying to read a book from 10 feet away while you're walking past it. It's already asking for a little work on the part of a viewer to look at your thing, be it a sign or a flyer or whatever. You don't want to add extra work by making them figure out what you're trying to say. It's a flyer, not Ulysses. I'll have some links in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast to examples of these fonts that I'm talking about so you can actually look at them, as well as others that I and some other people think are really good for most everything. There's a great website that I'll link to that basically says there are 25 fonts that will get you through your entire designing career. And in my opinion, 25 is actually a lot. So the important part is to pick one and use it. Using multiple fonts on a project is rarely a good idea. I'll also have a link for a great website called Identifont, where you can find some exciting and cool fonts and then compare them to other fonts like them. So if you're using a Windows machine, chances are you don't have Helvetica installed by default. But you'll soon find out, thanks to Identifont, that Swansea is a pretty close second to Helvetica. Check those out. But now that we've handled some very basic technique, let's look at how you can apply them and the tools you can use to make it happen. Graphic design software is an interesting thing because you can pick up some stuff for free, or you could pay thousands of dollars for it. Of course, some software is better than others for a given job. After all, you can make a flyer with Photoshop, but you'd probably be better off using something closer to Microsoft Publisher, right? So let's take a look at some software options and ideas that, as is the style of this show, we're going to concentrate on things that you can easily get your hands on without first needing to write yourself a grant. Besides, if you're just putting together a quick digital sign or an out-of-order sign for a public access computer, expensive software like Adobe Illustrator or InDesign is complete overkill. As always, we'll have links about all this stuff in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. And for several of these applications, I'll also put a link there for the portable version. Now, if you don't know, there's this great website called portableapps.com that specializes in software you can run right off of a flash drive, no installation needed. It's pretty much Windows only, but it's not like Windows is uncommon, so that usually isn't a problem. So even if you can't install this stuff on a computer at work, you may be able to simply run it from a flash drive or an external hard drive or something. However, there's nothing wrong with asking your IT folks to install some software for you, especially if you're going to need it and you can't beat the low, low price of free. Okay, so let's get started. Microsoft Publisher. While Publisher isn't free, it tends to be something that many library staff computers have on them, and it's usually on the public access computers too. If your library bought into the Microsoft Office suite, chances are you have access to Publisher somewhere. And you know what? That's great. Publisher is not baby's first desktop publishing software. Quite simply, Publisher is good. There's nothing wrong with it, even though designers and people who know how to design, you know, how to use design software, will shove it aside and tout the benefits of InDesign or something. Like I said, though, if you're just making a flyer or a sign or something like that, Publisher is superb, while InDesign is a nuclear solution to a firecracker problem. If you do need to get your hands on Publisher, and you're willing to pay, the easiest way to do it is to sign up for Microsoft Office 365. You can get it for $100 a year for a home edition, or $69.99 for a year for a personal edition. Like I said, chances are there's a computer in your library right now with Office installed on it, so there's no reason not to use Publisher. Scribus, or Scribus, or Scribus? I don't know. This is another one of those words that I don't think I've ever heard anybody pronounce, and I've always just pronounced it Scribus. S-C-R-I-B-U-S. Pick your poison. But if you want some industry-grade software for desktop publishing and design that has far more options than Publisher, and you don't want to pay a damn dime for it, great! Scribus has your number. Scribus is software that I personally use and recommend because of its flexibility. As I said, it's industry-grade software, and while it's free and open source, the feature set is amazing. Want to adjust text right down to the positioning, kerning, and spacing and style? You can do that. Do you want to place design and image at an angle in a very modernist sort of way? Sure. I won't lie, though. Scribus has a learning curve, but it's not very steep. You just have to spend some time using it, and after you do, I think you're going to like it. Any problems you have using it, well, there's an online manual, and Google is your friend. There's a portable edition of Scribus, too, and I'll have that link in the show notes. Microsoft Word, LibreOffice Writer, Apple Pages. Now, you can do a lot with a word processor, so long as you don't try to do too much. Look, there's nothing more minimal and easier to read than some large black text on a big white background. The problem most people will have with a word processor is when they try and tart everything up with multiple fonts and font sizes, and that makes things look horrible. If you simply need a large, unambiguous sign to hang on a door that says, "Story time today," then there's nothing at all wrong with a word processor. Just don't try to do so much with it. Microsoft Word comes with that previously mentioned Office 365 package, while Pages comes with any new Mac or iPad you buy these days. Now, LibreOffice is a free and open source solution, and there's links to the full and portable version of that in the show notes as well. Pick the one you like, they all have their strengths and weaknesses, but really they all have the same function: putting text on a page in a given way with various sizes. Well, that's sort of the basis of graphic design. Image editors and manipulators. Well then, you're probably going to want to do something with images and how they look. Maybe you want to add some text to an image for a digital display or something like that? Okay, I've got three options for you, ranging from free to relatively inexpensive. Now, when I say relatively inexpensive, your eyebrow might go up and say, you know, and you will ask, relevant to what? Well, good question. As Einstein says, the universe moves relative to the speed of light, and I offer the corollary that photo editors are inexpensive relative to Adobe Photoshop. Don't get me wrong, I freaking love Photoshop. It's great software. I am so glad the library I work for provides it for me for my job, because no way would I ever be able to buy it for myself. Rather than use Photoshop at home, I dig on Pixelmator for the Mac. At around $30, and you can sometimes even pick it up cheaper than that on sale, Pixelmator is the $100 of Photoshop that I actually use, and none of the $500 that I don't. And like I said, Pixelmator is $30. The downside is that it's only for OS X, but I'm serious here, folks. If you have a Mac, buy yourself a copy of Pixelmator. It's one of the best image editors out there, and it's perfect for the common person who isn't looking to be on the front cover of Imagine FX. While there's no portable app for it, Pixelmator is portable in that there is a really good version of it for the iPad too. And with iCloud sharing, and iCloud sharing actually sort of working now, you can save, you know, things on one side and pick them up on another. It's great. Do you want something a little less expensive? Well, there's always GIMP. Now, I have a love-hate relationship with GIMP. It's good, but it's annoying. It's well-built, but why in the hell did they put a given feature there when it make more sense to put it here? GIMP is awesome. There are just a few things here and there that I wish they'd patch up and change around. However, for the price, which is free, you cannot beat it. GIMP works everywhere, and it's totally cross-platform, so you can pick it up for Windows, OS X, Linux, whatever. And there's a portable version of it for Windows too, so you can still run this off of a flash drive. Finally, there's Corel Paint Shop Pro. Now, this is going to really date me, but I have been using Paint Shop off and on since it was a shareware product I picked up at a grocery store on a 3.5-inch floppy. Yes, dear listeners, I am that old. But you know what? While the cost seems high at around $80, Paint Shop Pro is still amazing, and I recommend it, especially if you're using Windows machines and have a little money to spend. Corel is really an unsung creator in the software world because they make some really decent kit. I mean, Video Studio, Painter, Aftershop Pro, these all get swept under the rug by big software like Final Cut and Lightroom. But for the more casual user who's not looking to do, you know, a high-grade professional level stuff, well, there's not a thing in the world wrong with Corel Creative products. And while they're not free, they're all incredibly affordable. So if you're looking for something a little higher budget with some more feature sets and sort of a better build than GIMP, check out Corel. I really got to recommend their stuff. I've used the Video Studio Pro for a long time, and it's excellent. I recommend it if someone can't get a hold of a Mac and Final Cut or iMovie or something like that. To me, it's one of the best video editing solutions for Windows. Now, here's a weird one that I don't know if I should recommend or not. See, vector design and illustration is a huge part of graphic design. However, does anyone outside of someone with a more than occasional interest in design even use a vector editor? I don't know, but I would still feel a little remiss in not mentioning Inkscape. Inkscape is different from a photo editor in that it's a vector editor, and a vector editor works with maths and not pixels. You know how you can take a small image and put it in Photoshop or Pixelmator or something like that and increase its size, and then it starts to look like a pixelated mess? Vectors don't do that. Vectors are lines and shapes controlled by mathematical formulae. You know what you can do with mathematics? You can add and subtract stuff. And that means your vector images do not get pixelated when you make them bigger or smaller. They look the same no matter what. Inkscape can help you with this, and it's the FOSS alternative to Adobe Illustrator, which happens to be the industry-grade version of a vector editor. Now, there is so much more out there in the realm of desktop design and publishing. If you have a favorite app or something that you think I missed, why not drop a comment in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast and let us know. However, the apps that I've mentioned here will most certainly get you started. I'll also have some links to some graphic design resources in the show notes, and there'll be a couple of books there, some links to some websites that are easy to read and offer a wealth of information to the casual designer and publisher. Between a few websites, a couple of books, and some decent software, you'll be making better signs, better flyers, and wonderful displays in no time. And hey, keep in mind, better looking signage makes for a better looking, easier to use library. And hey, that about wraps it up for this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you for coming back and tuning in after a holiday hiatus and a little downtime so I can kind of be with my friends and family and not have to worry about producing a show. Because let's face it, the holiday time, you know, Christmas and New Year's, that is hectic enough as is. Trying to get a show about library tech and technology out, I mean, that makes it even harder. And besides, I hope you're doing something with your friends and family, too, and have just a little something better to do than listening to me prattle on about libraries and technology. But hey, we're back every 2 weeks, as always, with Cyberpunk Librarian, and thank you for tuning in. The song you're currently digging on is Gravitational Slingshot by yours truly, Daniel Messer. Little something off my new EP, The View from Amalthea, which you can check that out in the show notes. I'll have some links to a Bandcamp if you want to buy it and contribute a little something towards the show. Or if you don't want to buy it and you just want to get yourself some spacey ambient style music for relaxation or whatever you might need it for, I'll have a link to my SoundCloud. You can just download it for free. I don't care either way. I'm into this whole giving things away kind of thing. Earlier in the show, you heard Woman in Blue by Café Del Chilia and Ivana Kupala Night by Crosswords. I will have links to those in the show notes as well. Some great music there. Check them out for some great artists that are far better than I am. But hey, if you like spacey ambient, you might check out The View from Amalthea. I think it turned out pretty okay. Cyberpunk Librarian is hosted by The Archive. That's right, the Internet Archive at archive.org. Some great people doing some great stuff over there, saving and preserving the Internet. But oh my god, folks, if you haven't checked out The Archive recently, you owe it to yourself to go have a look at the classic and retro video game archive that they're building over there. They've got stuff from the Sega Master System, Sega Genesis, all kinds of different consoles, along with some great stuff from the Commodore 64. And recently added, as in like the last 2 weeks, they've put up an archive of MS-DOS based games. Great stuff. You gotta go check that out. I mean, if you're into the retro gaming thing like I am, where retro means, you know, back when you were a kid and that wasn't so long ago and you don't feel very retro, well, you gotta go check out the Internet Archive. Good stuff there. And we thank them for all that they do, and we thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. If you need to contact me or you want to drop me a line, I am available on les Twitters at Bibrarian. That's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N. You can hit me up there, or you can hit me up on Google+, one of my favorite social networks of choice. That's google.com/plus Daniel Messer. And if you want the, you know, sort of old school SMTP variety, I am cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. Drop me a line. I will get back to you as soon as I can. I promise. Things have been a little busy and crazy, but I will get back to you. I promise that. So, hey, thank you for tuning in. Cyberpunk Librarian happens every 2 weeks, so I will see you again in 2 weeks with a new episode. Happy New Year. I hope it works out to be one of the best years for you and your library and how you use your technology in your library. So with that, I guess the only thing I need to do is remind you that you don't have to be high-tech to be low-budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care. I'll see you next time.